everybody, and welcome back to the DestroProds.com SpoilerCast. Today, we're going to be talking about Doctor Who Series 7, Episode 5, The Angels Take Manhattan. I'm your host, The Dead Man, joined today we have Bovion.
Hello.
Yeah, so if you watched his most recent Let's Play, which is currently up on the site, then you would have heard him talk a bit about this episode, and yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, and I talked about how much it frustrates me, and I realize, thinking back, there's honestly a lot that I like about the episode.
Yeah, there are cool things. It's just a lot of it is, it's all surrounded by stuff that's kind of weird.
Yeah, and a couple, I really find it's just a couple of things that really frustrate me with this episode. And if we take those away, it's honestly a good episode in my mind. I almost appreciate the weirdness of some of the stuff, but I guess we'll get into that as we go through it.
Yes. So, let's start this off. Again, we are just reading from the Wikipedia article. This is so that we can get a good general plot synopsis, and then we talk about it. So, in a prologue, a private detective in 1938 New York is hired by a shady man called Grail to investigate moving statues at a particular address. There, he finds an elderly version of himself dying in bed. Chased by weeping angels to the rooftop, the man is confronted by the Statue of Liberty itself, which has changed location and is grimacing at him. The Doctor, Amy, and Rory enjoy a picnic in Central Park in present-day New York City.
Sorry, can I interrupt you?
Yes.
Because the part you talked about, everything up to the Statue of Liberty, this is before the opening.
Yes.
And this is what I thought set the tone for the rest of the episode. Which is probably why, for a while, until I really thought about it, I was hating on this episode hard. Because the fucking Statue of Liberty, there's so much wrong with that. One, they don't just infect statues. They're not statue zombies.
No, they are pre-existing beings who leave statues behind when people are looking at them. Right?
Exactly. That's what they've always been. That's what Stephen Moffat originally wrote them as. It really bugs me what he does with the Weeping Angels, considering they're his own creation and his best creation.
Yeah, and just the whole idea that the Statue of Liberty is one of them is so stupid.
It's purely put in there as a gimmick. It serves absolutely no good purpose to the story, and it doesn't make any sense. I mean, how is it possible that at any second, nobody is looking at the Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, that's why a lot of this episode doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
But yeah, well, as everyone will discover, these are the things that bug me. The things done with the Weeping Angels. But moving on.
Yeah, so the Doctor, Amy, and Rory enjoy picking in Central Park in present-day New York City. The Doctor is reading a 1930s detective novel while Rory leaves them to go for coffee. To the Doctor's and Amy's surprise, Rory turns up in the plot of the novel as the Doctor reads on. The Doctor and Amy continue to read in concurrence with the events in the past, as Rory is joined by the book's narrator, who turns out to be River Song. They are both abducted by Grail's henchmen. River tells Rory that New York is subjected to unusual time distortions which would prevent the TARDIS from landing in this time period. The Doctor, meanwhile, decides not to read any more of the novel, which is credited to Melody Malone, an alias used by River to investigate the Weeping Angels in 1938 New York. He fears that he will be forced to follow the plot once he becomes aware of it.
Which, is that the section where you're pausing?
Yes.
Okay, I really like what was done with the whole idea of, as soon as you know it, it's a fixed point. As soon as you read to the end of the book, it has to happen.
Yeah, spoilers.
The idea of that was just so incredible to me that, it was honestly really cool as that happened throughout the episode, where knowing the future makes it happen, and where reading the book makes you have to follow the plot of the book, and how that has the effect on the timeline that it does.
Yeah, like it's actually kind of cool, because like in everything that I've seen, like whenever anyone else has like a vision of the future, by them simply knowing it, the future changes. And so this is like kind of the exact opposite of that, whereas as soon as you know the future, it is fixed. You have to do that.
Exactly, which is one of the coolest things, because when people question time travel a lot, they're like, well, if you know the future, couldn't you change it? Why wouldn't you change it? But then it's honestly true that could you? Would you be able to at all?
No. Like,
and yeah, in all probability, no. If you know the future, it's unlikely you're going to be able to change it.
Mm-hmm. Like, you'd always take steps to try to change it, but unless you knew, like, the specific events that led up to that one event. Like, let's say you know, hey, this building's going to get destroyed. Unless you, like, this building's going to blow up. But unless you know the exact steps that lead up to that building getting destroyed, you won't be able to change a fucking thing.
Or, even then, if you know about it and it becomes a fixed point, it could end up very much like the waters on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Where he changes something, but that doesn't change, the fixed point.
Mm. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, I do like everything that's happening with the book. Like, the beginning thing where there's, like, the really quick edits, like, cutting back to, like, present-day New York and going back to, like, 1938 New York and just seeing, like, both sides of the conversation happening, but through a book. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a very interesting direction to take the episode.
Yeah, it's just the one thing that I don't really like is, so while this is all happening, like, Docker and Amy, they are walking toward the TARDIS to try to go back to 1938 New York. But you see them, like, go from Central Park to the Brooklyn Bridge to the TARDIS, and those three points are pretty far apart from each other. And yet, at each point, their conversation is in the exact same place they left it. Like, so they're talking in Central Park, and then something happens, and they're on the Brooklyn Bridge. But the conversation hasn't moved forward. Like, the Doctor is replying to a question that Amy asked in Central Park, and then Amy has another question, and then the Doctor replies to that when they're at the TARDIS, while the Brooklyn Bridge is clearly in the background. Like, I don't know.
I can see how that would bother you.
Yeah, which is little editing things that just really bugged me, and I know I don't know why I'm always, I don't know why I'm suddenly talking about editing and all this. I just, this job changes you.
It comes with the job. I would have noticed if I knew what New York is like. And I know that makes me sound ignorant, but I've never been there. I've never cared to go there. So I haven't really looked at the layout of New York recently.
Yeah, I don't know what New York, I've never been to New York, but I have watched a lot of TV shows set in New York. So I've seen a lot of flyover shots set to really crappy pop music. Like Castle, specifically. there's always the flyover, and like the fucking Central Park is in the middle of Manhattan, from what I have seen. Like, it's smack dab in the middle there, and then the Brooklyn Bridge is on the edge of Manhattan. So yeah. Anyway,
if we're wrong, leave an angry comment.
Yes, please, New Yorkers. Let us know if we butcher the geography of your city that we've never been to. but yeah. So I actually do, but one line that I really liked in this, I'm probably paraphrasing here because I can't remember the exact line, but the Doctor's like, we just bounced off 1938. I don't know why, yeah. I just really like that line. Yeah. Anyway, so continuing on. Grail has Rory locked up in his basement with cherub-shaped weeping angels while River is taken to a secured office. Information she provides via the book allows the Doctor to signal her by writing on an old Chinese vase, and she activates a homing beacon, allowing the Doctor to guide the TARDIS to Grail. In the meantime, Grail has shown River a damaged weeping angel, part of his collection, and allowed it to grab River's wrist in order to gain information about the angels from her. Amy deduces that River will write the book, and though wary of reading ahead for spoilers, guesses she would have left hints, and they identify Rory's location from the chapter titles. However, as Amy races off, the doctor finds the last chapter is about Amy's farewell and frets. It's kind of an understatement.
Yeah, upset. He pretty much freaks the fuck out.
Oh yeah, he is. Yeah, we'll get to it, but anyway. So upset, he tells River to free herself from the weeping angel without breaking her wrist, as Amy has already read this point in the had already read this in the book, making it a fixed event in time. The Doctor joins Amy and finds that Rory has run out of matches with no means to look at the angels, just was snatched by them. River appears, having freed herself apparently without harm from the angel, and soon locates Rory nearby at the Winter Quay, which is spelled like Quay, so I'm just going to keep calling it the Winter Quay, apartment block. He has unusually been moved in space and not time. However, as they race to leave, the doctor grabs River's hand, discovers that her wrist is broken. Realizing the event in the book is books are still coming true, the doctor uses his regeneration energy to heal River. So yeah, there are cherub angels now.
Yeah, I didn't like those. They were pretty much pointless to the story.
Yeah, one thing, like, and you said, like, they pretty much infected statues. Like the beginning in the intro there, that, like the guy kept looking outside in at, like, a statue, and then, and, like, keep looking back at it, and then look again, and, oh my god, one of the statues is gone. Like, when the TARDIS showed up, and then when these guys left and quit, and Grail woke up, the statues actually came in and attacked him.
Yeah, it was actually just, you know, run-of-the-mill statues, which is really stupid. I mean, at the end of Blink, they kind of did this thing where they repeated the Doctor's sentences about not blinking and always watching for the Weeping Angels while showing you a bunch of statues, basically trying to have the effect of creeping you out and kind of unnerving you around statues. Mm-hmm. This was not meant to imply that all statues are Weeping Angels.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but anyway,
yeah,
and so the part with River and the Weeping Angel is one of my big problems with this episode. There are multiple times where no one's looking at the angels at all, and they're still statues.
Absolutely. And you can technically get away with it a little bit. Because it's kind of established in Blink that the camera counts as a person.
Yeah, but there are multiple times when no one, including the camera, was looking at the angels.
Yeah, and also, the angel's already touching River. Why didn't it send her back in time already?
Wasn't it because she was damaged and too weak to do it?
No, sending people back in time restores their time energy, so... restores their energy, so that makes absolutely no sense.
I don't fucking know. Yeah, there's a lot of just, like, shit like that. Like, especially when we get to the end. I'll be talking about that, oh, will I?
Oh, yeah, in regards to people actually looking at the angels?
In regards to everything.
Yeah.
God, so... Anyway, yeah, so this... Oh, God, it's... Grail's an idiot. Like, he is retarded. Oh, dear God. Like,
on many levels, yes.
Yeah, fuck, I don't even...
Oh, yeah, sorry. As a note for the no one looking at the angel, there's also a long period of time where River is left alone with the angel.
Yes.
There's no way she didn't blink.
Yeah. And there's even a bit where... God, it's... It's like... So looking at, I guess looking at her hand would count because there was a bit, because there was that bit where like had the camera like around the corner and could see, you still see River's hand held by the angel's wrist and she wasn't looking at it. But it's just, yeah, and also apparently angels can breathe while their people are looking at them. Because apparently angels breathe.
Well, it makes sense if they breathe when they're not statues, but ever since Stephen Moffat used the Weeping Angels in season 5, we've learned that they're always statues. You know, that whole it's not a statue when it's only a statue when you're looking at it, that no longer applies.
Yeah, fuck. But yeah. So other thing to just kind of bug me. So the angels, they're supposed to be able to move at, like, incredible speeds, right?
Yes.
So then, why is it that when the little baby angels were running around, they sounded like normal running speed? And they actually made sounds when they were running?
Because cherub angels?
That's it? Because cherub angels?
I'm thoroughly convinced now that Stephen Moffat has taken his greatest design, which was the Weeping Angel, that was his original idea, and has decided to turn it into nothing more than a gimmick. And that is really disappointing because the Weeping Angels, they are very, very versatile. And there was a lot of good story in this episode, but just he always feels the need to add something to them. He feels like his original idea of the Weeping Angels isn't enough. They need to be escalated, which is absolutely stupid. They were fine in Blink. The idea of them is still fine. How many differences do you think that Daleks really need? It's a robot trash can that murders you. The Weeping Angels didn't need all these additions, and he just keeps adding these things, and they're just gimmicky.
Yeah. Like, if the show had merchandising, I would have expected him to, like, I would have expected it to be like, hey, we made all these new Weeping Angels so you can buy all these Weeping Angel toys.
If it does have Weeping Angel, it does have merchandising, and the merchandising has gotten far more strong since, guess what, Stephen Moffat took over as lead writer, because now there's all these extra toys that could be sold. I'm not saying it's him who's doing the merchandising, I'm just saying he makes it easier for the people who do the merchandising to do it.
Yeah, that seems to be the thing. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Stephen Moffat, like, became head writer because of, like, a covert conspiracy he had going on with the marketing department.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, like, hey, now we have all these new Daleks, and hey, now we have this, now we have all these Weeping Angels. Buy them at your local Toys R Us. Or British equivalent. Do the Brits have Toys R Us?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Buy this at your local British toy department store.
Or you can get it at ThinkGeek.com. Click the link at the bottom of the page to go to ThinkGeek.com and get your Weeping Angels, Sonic Screwdrivers, everything Doctor Who, pretty much.
You are learning, Grasshopper. But yeah, so just... And one final thing with this. So, the regeneration energy, the Doctor can just whip that out any time?
No. It has specifically been said in previous episodes that he's only able to use it just after his regeneration.
So, yeah, like, that was a thing I was just like, wait, why can he do that now?
He can't. Otherwise, he would have done it a lot more times.
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, so moving on. At the Quay, Rory is drawn to an apartment labeled with his name. Just as the other catch up to him, in the apartment they find an elderly Rory on his deathbed, calling to Amy before dying. The Doctor realizes that Rory's fate is now assured and adduces that the Angels have used this building many times and is within the populous New York City as a battery farm, leaving their victims to live out their lives in solitude, whilst the Angels feast on their energy. Rory and Amy refuse to accept their fate, insisting that they can run from the Angels forever. The Doctor and River agree and help to distract the Angels converging on them. Amy and Rory make it to the roof of the building where the Statue of Liberty, a giant angel itself, awaits to take Rory to the past. Rory determines that there's another exit. Were he to die by jumping off the roof before the Angels take him, a paradox would be creating, ending their praying methods and wiping them from existence. Rather than pushing him as he requested, Amy opts to join him, and just as the Doctor and River reach the rooftop, the two jump, creating a paradox and killing the Angels. So, yeah.
Well, I can kind of see... I can see how it works, and honestly, I like that plot device. One thing I'd like to... Oh, God, I forgot it. Shit. Okay, yes, back to it. The whole battery farm thing, it doesn't make any sense.
Okay, explain.
Because basically, here's how it was explained in Blink. You've got all this potential time energy to keep moving forward to the future. However, when the Weeping Angel touches you, it absorbs that energy, which then sends you to the past, so that you live to roughly around the time that the Angel touched you. Or maybe not even as long. But basically, those years that you would have had are now erased, and that gave the Angel energy. That does not rip you open and turn you into a time battery. The energy was given once, the energy was expended once, that's it. However, okay,
actually rip anyone open? Like with this one, it's just bloop, and then they're in the hotel.
No, I didn't mean literally rip them open. I meant, like, create some sort of opening for time energy to start spilling out of them. People are not time energy batteries.
Okay. So yes. But so then we get them up on the roof, and the giant fucking Statue of Liberty angel. Oh, God.
It pains you to say that, doesn't it?
It really does. Like, I don't even know why. Like, it's a gimmick, yes, but it's a kind of fun gimmick.
I don't like it.
Oh, no, it is fucking stupid. It is a shit idea, but I have a bizarre, I have a bizarre propensity for shit. Like, there are some pieces of shit out there that are just like, oh, God, this is terrible. I love it.
So basically, if anyone was going to accept this bullshit, it would be you.
Oh, no, I wouldn't accept it. It'd be fucking stupid, but I'd still be like, that was kind of cool.
Okay.
Just this giant fucking scowling fanged face staring at you. But yeah, it's complete fucking bullshit that it was able to just walk down the street and they could hear it walking down the street. And at no point was anyone like, oh, I wonder what that is, and looked out and just looked at it and they just froze in place.
No, oh, I wonder why the Statue of Liberty is not where it's supposed to be. And it didn't crush anything either.
Yeah.
Come on, Moffat. Can you try to put some logic behind your thoughts, please?
Hey, come on. Ghostbusters 2 did this better than you. But anyway, so this is where the bullshit of no one looking at the angels really hits. Because there is this one scene, extended scene, where Amy and Rory are looking directly at each other.
And
the camera is focused, and the camera is shot, the camera's positioned in such a way that it is not looking at the giant Statue of Liberty angel.
And so it should have, I was thinking the exact same thing. I'm like, why haven't they been caught by the angel yet? Hello?
Yeah, for that entire scene, they're just like, why isn't the angel doing anything? Why isn't it doing anything? Come on, they're right fucking there. Do something. Why are you just waiting to get... Why? You're fucking killing yourself, people.
Oh, well, he's going to create a paradox, which actually, like I said, I thought the paradox was a really cool idea.
Yeah, it's a cool idea, but it just has a plot hole in it. A kind of big plot hole that I'm going to be talking about later. So, continuing along, I guess. The four find themselves in a New York graveyard in the present era again, though the Doctor knows with the paradox he can no longer travel to that point in time in fear of destroying New York. As the others enter the TARDIS, Rory spots a tombstone with his name on it, most of her being touched by one surviving angel and disappearing into the past. A distraught Amy convinces herself that if she were touched by the same angel, it would send her to the same time it sent Rory. While she was still staring at the angel, she tearfully says goodbye to River. The Doctor tries to talk her out of it, knowing he can't return to the past to see her again, but River insists she goes. Amy finally says goodbye to the Raggedy Man, her early nickname for the Doctor, as she turns to face him and lets the angel take her. The tombstone then changes to reflect Amy's presence in the past with Rory, having both died of old age. In the TARDIS, the distraught Doctor asks River to travel with him, which she agrees to do, but not always. He then realizes she would deliver the manuscript of the text to Amy to publish, and finds an afterword for him written by Amy. In the afterword, Amy tells him that she and Rory love him and assure him that they've lived a good and happy life together. She also requests that he pay another visit to her younger self to reassure her that he will be back for her and take her on amazing journeys. As the episode ends, young Amelia Pond waits for the Doctor in her garden, looking to the sky as she hears the sound of the TARDIS engines. So, earlier they created a paradox, thus meaning that the Winter Quay never exists, and angels are dead, I guess, except for that one, which I guess is still roaming.
The only way I could see that making sense is if it was the first one to show up. That's the only way that single angel makes sense. So it showed up. Its existence on our planet was completely independent of the whole Winter Quay thing, of all the other angels. And it's the one that, I guess, God help me for saying this, infected the other statues after creating the Winter Quay and whatever.
That sounds so stupid, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. They're statue zombies.
Yeah. But anyways, that's what I'm talking about. So the Winter Quay, it shouldn't, like, none of the stuff that should happen, like, everything that happened in the episode was canceled out by the Paradox. So then, why did River have to then to go write the book to give to the Doctor so that he would be able to read it and then have everything be erased?
I'm gonna say that for you to create a paradox, you need to create a timeline that will cause said paradox. So a complicated space-time event on the instructions of a complicated space-time event sent a manuscript to a complicated space-time event to be published, to be sent back to the first complicated space-time event. That's all sorts of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey, and complicated enough to actually cause a paradox.
Fuck you. It just is so... Time travel always makes me just scratch my head and just, like... There are just so many logistics of it that I just can't fucking figure out.
If you're ever thinking too much about the logistics, just think wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
Yes, I think about that, and then I start trying to deconstruct that. But anyway, and yeah, it ends with... So it ends, like, in the episode where... So the episode where, like, Amy is... Like, beginning of the series, Amy, like, runs out, like, gets all packed up, gets all her shit, runs out of the backyard and just sits there, and the Doctor never shows up. And so, now he did.
And yeah,
Meaning that he created a different timeline with all of that, because I remember from the first episode, like, well, from when Amy was introduced, I guess, kind of, I hope I remember this right. But yeah, Doctor shows up, Amy helps him out, he says, all right, yeah, we'll come pick you up a bit, we'll go adventuring and shit. And she packs up all her shit, runs outside, and sits there, then nothing happens. Then she waits X number of years, and then Doctor shows up, and he's like, you never came back. And it's like, what? And then, but now with this, he did come back, but then he left again, saying, don't worry, I'll be back.
Perhaps she was lying the whole time.
Why?
Because the Doctor told her to.
So the Doctor told her to lie to the Doctor about events that were brought about by her and the Doctor.
Because it was a future version of himself, he wouldn't want to hear it, right? Because you're not supposed to hear... No spoilers.
Fuck you.
I'm sorry, man. If there's a way to make a plot hole make sense, I will find it.
There are so many things
I do, however, think it's kind of stupid.
Oh, yeah, it's real fucking stupid. But yeah, so that was Angels Take Manhattan. And that is the final episode of Doctor Who until Christmas. Because I guess Stephen Moffat's like, fuck you, we're going on break.
Yeah, that's what he does now. He does like a half season, then Christmas, then another half season. It used to be like, Christmas, now is crunch time.
Yeah. It really pisses me off when this happens. It really pisses me off when that happens. But yeah, actually, what do you think?
Davies.
Yeah, actually, what did you think of Amy and Rory, the way that they got sent off?
Well,
like, I'm not that big of a fan of it. Like, in every, like, with all the other, like, people, we've had some big, huge thing to send them off. And with this one, it's just, boop, you're gone.
That's actually a really good point. The only slightly more, how can I say it, anticlimactic send-off was with Martha Jones.
Yeah, because she's the only one who didn't go to another dimension, die, or have her memory erased.
Yeah, she just sort of... She leaves, and then she's back in, like, three episodes.
And he's like, well, this has been fun. See you later.
And then, but even that was after a really big event, whereas, you're right, Amy and Rory, they just sort of, it sort of just happens.
Yeah. It's just, hey, an effect that I actually saw take place in an episode of Film Riot, and then nothing. Hey, here's a tombstone. Great Scott. Actually, nothing about that is kind of a Back to the Future moment. It was like walking along, find your own tombstone, and then you go back in time to make that tombstone become reality.
The only way I could see... Oh, sorry. The only way I could see that being better is if the Doctor really had a much bigger freak out about it.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of Back to the Future, that reminds me, that tombstone, the time, the wibbly-wobbly shit on it was all wrong. They're walking along, and then we see the tombstone. It has Rory's name on it. And then he gets sent back in time, and then the age that he died shows up. And then Amy goes back, and then Amy walks up to him and is like, oh, hey, there's room left on here for one more name. And then she goes back, and then her name appears on it. It should have been all of their names were on it. The like, Amy's name, Rory's name, they were on it. And it's like, huh, these people die, and they had our same names. Blap. It's really fucking stupid.
Anyways, despite the many issues with this episode, I did kind of like it.
Yeah, it had some cool shit in it.
You are right that Amy and Rory should have had a bit of a bigger send-off, but I think the reason that happened is because they stayed too goddamn long.
So they stayed too long, and so they're just like, boom, you're gone.
Well, pretty much, they stayed through two really big Doctor Who events. And so far, nothing's even been built up to yet this season. And this is where they're leaving. This is the point that they're going. They don't have a big event to send them off. Had they left at the end of season 5 or at the end of season 6, they would have had a nice big event to send them off. But in the middle of a season, you're pretty much setting yourself up for anticlimax.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly happened, whether the actors chose to leave or whether Moffat decided to get rid of them. If Moffat decided to get rid of them, that's a bit of a dick move. If one of the actors or both the actors decided to leave, then yeah, that's honestly on them because they're leaving the middle of a season.
Mm. Anyway. That's going to do it for the Doctor Who spoiler cast for the next few months. We'll be back around Christmas time. We'll be introduced to the Doctor's new companion, who is played by the same actress who played Oswin in The Asylum of the Daleks.
By the way, I figured out that she could actually be Oswin.
Okay,
oh,
so
yes,
how did Oswin...
I wibbly wobbly some timey-wimeys.
So how did Oswin end up in Victorian times?
I'm not going to get into that here. Anyways.
The new Doctor, the Doctor Chris Special is going to be in Victorian times. That's where Oswin shows. And that's where the actress who plays Oswin shows up to be his companion.
Victorian times. That breaks the rules. That breaks the companion rules.
Well, they're always... Yeah, hasn't every companion been from the time period that the show is being broadcast in?
Yes, that is the point. The point of the companion is to give the viewer someone who is from their own time period so they are relatable to travel with the Doctor. That is the purpose that the companion serves. Not, as Stephen Moffat says, to be the lead of the show. The point is they're that sort of ease you into the TARDIS life. They're that connection that you have to what's going on. Without them, it's all sort of pointless. Yes, the companion is important for that reason. They're not the main part. They're not the main focus of the show, but they're very important for that. And that's why it's fairly important that they be from our time period, as they have always been. Stephen Moffat just hates the rules, and he hates the previous writers. This is the only conclusion I can come to, is that he's basically flipping a big middle finger to all the previous lead writers of Doctor Who and saying, I'm doing things my way now, bitches.
Maybe it's timely-wimely. Maybe it's timey-wimey shit, and she actually is just someone from our time got sent back in time. I don't fucking know. Maybe the angel sent her back. Yeah, you don't know. Oh, yeah. So be sure to join us at Christmas for more Doctor Who. But until Christmas, I'm the Dead Man.
Obi-Wan.
See you guys next time.